I'd like to introduce our guest speaker, Venerable Thupten Jidren, who has been a student of Buddhism for 40 years and ordained as a nun in the Tibetan tradition in 1977. After years studying and teaching Buddhism in Asia, Europe, and the U.S., to our great good fortune, she became the founder and abbess of Sarvasti Abbey outside Newport, not even an hour away from us, just about 10 years ago. This is the eighth year that nuns from Sarvasti have taught meditation here in our chapel on Monday nights, for which we are most grateful. Venerable is also the author of several best-selling books, including among them Buddhism for Beginners, Buddhism, One Teacher and Many Traditions, co-authored with His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and An Open-Hearted Life, co-authored with local EWU psychology professor, Dr. Russell Coltz. And in fact, our meditation group on Monday nights is actually studying this last book written by a psychologist and a Tibetan Buddhist nun. It's a fascinating book, and they might even have some back at the reading table. But in any case, I'm delighted, Venerable, to welcome you back to our pulpit.
Thank you, Susan, and thank you, everybody. I quite enjoy coming and speaking to this congregation because it's a bunch of people who care and are open-minded. Now, I have to admit that I never imagined somebody in my life welcoming me to a pulpit. Because when I was young, I thought, you know, going to church, going to temple was the most boring thing that you could do on a Sunday morning. And there was some good reason for that. How many of you felt that way as kids? Like, boring. And then the people I saw going to church would say all these nice, wonderful things. Oh, may everybody live in peace. May we have happiness and harmony and share with open hearts to everybody. And they say all these wonderful words. And then there was no practice behind it. There was zero behind it. The words did not change people's hearts. They would leave the church and do the same old thing. You know, gossip about this one, put down that one, you know, have a very closed heart towards other people. And then, you know, go to church the next Sunday and be filled with light and love and bliss again. So that's why one of the reasons I didn't like church and religion very much. And one thing that really made an impression upon me when I started learning Buddhism was that people practiced it and that there was a method to actually change our minds. Because, you know, we talk about light and kindness and compassion, but how do you have a happy mind filled with love and compassion? I mean, how do you do it? You can't just sit there and go, well, I should love everybody, you know. So all these jerks out there are so stupid, you know. Especially the ones, I won't mention presidential candidates, but especially some of them. And I'm supposed to love them and wish them well. How is that possible? Impossible. Yeah? And ISIS? I'm supposed to have love and compassion for ISIS? You gotta be joking. Yeah? And, you know, and then everybody keeps talking about light and love and bliss, but nobody knows how to get your mind to that place. And that was something that really kind of grabbed me with Buddhism, was there was an actual method to train the mind. Yeah. And it requires a lot of, it's training the mind. It's really going back, retraining our mind. And we have to start with kind of taking an inventory of where we're at and what kind of thoughts really go on in our heart and in our mind. Okay? Any of you go from last Sunday to this Sunday without getting angry at someone? How about from yesterday to today? Yeah? It's hard not to get angry at people, isn't it? It's hard, you know? So what is it that makes it so easy to get angry and so hard not to get angry? No, it has a lot to do with our own self-centered attitude. Yeah, the thought in our mind that operates, you know, subconsciously, and that is the assumption that everything should be the way I want it to be, and that I'm the center of the universe. And that's actually why people are so stupid, because they don't realize I'm the center of the universe and that things should go my way and that all my ideas are correct. Yeah, because I would not believe anything that's incorrect, even if I change my mind tomorrow and believe something different, that one is correct, and what I believe now is also correct. Because I'm not fickle. Other people are fickle. Okay? So, you know, when I started really beginning to look at myself and see the kind of ideas and emotions that were going on inside, you know, underlain by this thought of I'm the center of the universe and everybody and everything should be the way I wanted it to be, then I began to understand why it was so hard for me to connect with other people. And why it was hard for me to have an open heart towards them and some care for them, because I was totally preoccupied with myself. Anybody else here have that problem? Yeah, that's right. All these other people. Yeah, they all have that problem. But I'm the one who doesn't. Yeah. Okay. So I think it's really important to kind of own where we're at and then ask ourselves, you know, does it really help me to be self-centered? Yeah. When I'm self-centered, does it really benefit me? Yeah, because there's one, you know, what did they say? If I'm not for myself, who's going to be for me? And if I don't take care of myself, who's going to take care of me? You know, and that makes sense. But then to go from there to everything should be the way I want it to be? It's a big step, but anyway, we take it. Yeah. And, you know, to really stop and say, you know, does this being self-centered benefit me? Because when I think about only myself and my feelings and my interests and what I want, I'm preventing myself from connecting to somebody else who isn't interested or who doesn't care about all those things. Yeah. And of course, they have other interests. But I think they're boring, and so I don't reach out to connect with them. Yeah, because I expect everybody to connect with me. You know, I mean, we just got done with Thanksgiving, right? Yeah, how was your, forget the perfect Thanksgiving, yeah? Did everybody at your Thanksgiving get along with each other? Yeah? Or do we all have our family Thanksgivings in which, you know, you're an adult and you go back to being a six-year-old when you're with your family? And you say, you know, you and your brother or sister do the same, you know, dancing, what is it, show that you do every year, you know. He says this and you say that, and, you know, the same old, you know. And of course, it's always their fault. Never my fault. Because I'm sweet and innocent, open-minded, good-hearted. So, you know, if we're really going to have compassion, we need to somehow crack open this very narrow mind of ours by realizing that it makes us miserable. Yeah, because the more we focus on ourselves, the more supersensitive we are to what everybody else says and does, because we take it all very personally. Yeah? Thanksgiving dinner is such a good example of these things. Yeah? You know, some relative makes some innocuous remark, but you know that it's a snide remark about you. Because they do this every year. Okay. But we don't do them that to them, do we? Maybe a little. Maybe we just say a few things that we know are going to, like, really get to them. But we do it for their own good. So that they'll learn a lesson. So that they know how it feels when other people make fun of them. Yeah? But, you know, when we act like that, who benefits? Do we really benefit from putting other people down? Yeah? When we do that, again, you know, we're the ones that are building the wall between ourselves and other living beings. So I find it very helpful to give myself an assignment every now and again, to talk to people who I wouldn't normally talk to. You know, because we all have our judgmental mind, right? We look at somebody and right away we know what they're like. Yeah? Don't we? You know, you sit on a park bench, you watch the people go by, and you make all these judgments about them. And, or am I the only person that does that? You know, but all these judgments about other people, and then that, it's like, I don't want to get close to them because they're like this and this and this, because their hair is like that and their skin color is like this and their clothes are like that and they walk in this way. So I know everything about them just by seeing those things. So I give myself this little assignment to try and talk to people I wouldn't normally talk to, and to make it a point to find some topic of conversation that we both find interesting, and to broaden my scope, you know, of what even I find interesting, so that I can talk to this person who is a Civil War buff, who collects all the memorabilia from the Civil War, you know, and loves the Confederate flag, you know. And can I find something to talk with that person about and communicate with them about on some level other than the Confederate flag, you know? So I find that this kind of exercise is very good for me, because it shows me that Most of my judgments and opinions about other people are wrong. And it's actually nice to be wrong sometimes, isn't it? You know, to say that, gee, you know, how I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, that's keeping me imprisoned is wrong. That's kind of a big relief. I could put it down then. And then maybe I can look at other people and say, wow, they want to be happy and avoid suffering just like me. We're not that different. Yeah. They like to eat meat, and that brings them happiness. And I won't go near this stuff. And I can also get on my soapbox about being vegetarian if you want me to. But I'm not going to. I'm going to be friends with this other person. I'm going to listen to them. I'm going to see what's in their heart. Yeah. So I sometimes, I can't say this many places, but I sometimes imagine, I wonder what would it be like to go and have a private conversation with Donald Trump. You know? What would that be like to try in my heart to connect with him? Because right now, he and I are not connecting very much. So I, you know, I think of him. Actually, you know, we do chanting and bowing twice a week at the Abbey. And I usually visualize the entire U.S. Congress around me, you know, as we're paying homage to the Buddha, as we're bowing and making ourselves humble, as we're trying to cultivate an attitude of loving kindness. I think of Rick Cruz, you know, and leading, being able to connect with Rick Cruz. No, not Rick Cruz. That Rick, I always get this confused. Rick, because Rick Cruz is our in our county. He's the guy that checks the buildings. It's Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz. Okay, I don't think they're relatives. But you know, I imagine trying to connect with Ted Cruz. Yeah. And then I think of Jihadi John. Yeah. Remember him? Yeah. They put on our newspaper, in, you know, that they had killed him the morning of the same day that evening was the Paris attack. And people didn't see any similarity between our killing Jihadi John and the Paris attack. Anyway, I'm not supposed to talk about politics. You know, because nuns are supposed to be sweet. But, you know, I think, wow, what would it be like to sit down and have a conversation with Jihadi John? You know, can I open my heart to somebody who I have a stereotype vision of? You know? Can I let go of my stereotype vision? It's not like he's chopping people's heads off 24/7. You know, there must be some other side to this human being. Can I find that side? Can I connect? Yeah. Because unless I can do that, then my efforts at love and compassion are really going to be very limited. Yeah, limited to the people who are on my side, who are on my team, who like me, who agree with me. And then I make an enemy out of the people who don't agree with me. And And that doesn't work, especially when we're trying to be active in our compassion and do something on a social level to be a benefit to society. When we create enemies out of the people that we disagree with, then, you know, somehow meeting somewhere is going to be very, very difficult. Yeah. I really saw that, you know, way back when I was doing protests against the Vietnam War, you know, back with the dinosaurs. I think some of you were dinosaurs along with me. And I remember being at UCLA and, you know, we were here and the cops were there, and the guy next to me picked up a brick or a stone or something and threw it. And I went, whoa. You know, wait a minute. Because I realized that as soon as somebody does that, our mind becomes exactly like the mind of the people we're protesting against. It becomes a mind filled with anger. It becomes a mind filled with us and them. So if I go through my life making us and them, I may have different us's and different them's, but my mind is exactly the same as the other person's mind. And that's why I've always thought that all fundamentalists would actually get along very well, because they all think alike. They just have different thoughts that they're fundamentalist about. But am I going to be a fundamentalist about whatever my cause is and, you know, go through life with my side and their side? I don't want to do that. So it really involves stretching inside, you know, stretching our boundaries. And that entails action, you know, going out and talking with people, going and making friends with people that we wouldn't ordinarily speak with. Yeah. And if we have that kind of approach where we're really looking at how can I improve myself so that I can contribute to the benefit of the world, then we never fall prey to discouragement. We never get what people call compassion fatigue, which somebody pointed out to me, because in the book, An Open-Hearted Life, Russell and I wrote one thing about compassion fatigue, and I sent it out to some people to, you know, write the recommendation blurbs about your book, and somebody wrote back and said, there's no such thing as compassion fatigue, because if you get burnt out by helping other people, your motivation hasn't been pure compassion. And I thought about it, and it's correct, because when we get burnt out, it's because we're holding some kind of expectation. Yeah, this is my social welfare project, or this is my contribution to the neighborhood or to my family or whoever it is. And I'm giving, and people should at least say thank you. If not, you're wonderful. Yeah, and they should at least do what I want them to do, because after all, I'm giving so much. And so that kind of expectation is it, that's what brings about discouragement and burnout, because we're wanting very quick change instead of realizing that, you know, when we even look and start to try and change ourselves, seeing that it's a gradual process that we have to go through. And so with society, so with other people, it's a gradual process. It's important to accept people for where they're at right now, and and encourage their good qualities instead of yelling and screaming because they don't do everything we want them to do. Yeah. So I think that's quite important in our activism, whether we're active in the social sphere or whether we're, you know, taking care of our family or, you know, just keeping your job and contributing to the welfare of the people you work with and the welfare of society by the work you do. Now, to really cultivate in our hearts a sense of connection, a sense of wanting to give to other people, whatever we give, in big or small ways. Yeah. Sometimes it's just a hello, sometimes it's a smile, sometimes it's more than that. That's great. Yeah. But to be satisfied with that and satisfied with how people respond. And then that gives us a long-term view, and then we can keep going in the right direction. And for me, knowing I'm going in the right direction is good enough. Yeah? As long as I'm going in the right direction, doesn't matter how long it takes. Yeah, I'm going there. That's good. So keeping that positive intention in our hearts, no matter what goes on around us. Yeah, no matter whether the rest of the world is telling you you're nuts. So, let's go do it now. Okay?